I don't know if it's my castrating bitch fetish or what. Radio Drome. With the Halloween season coming up, it's another Radio Drome. I'm Josh Hadley. With me, as always, is Cecil T.
I certainly am.
And back this week from Canadian Thanksgiving is Peter. Peter, what the hell is Canadian Thanksgiving? Cecil and I couldn't figure it out last week.
I think technically it's like Columbus Day or some shit. I mean, I don't really agree with Thanksgiving as a holiday to begin with, but, you know, I wanted to spend time with family. Like, I don't actually agree with Christopher Columbus and whatnot.
You know what you can agree with? Going to adamandeve.com, using the promo code DROME, and you would get 10 free gifts on top of whatever you order. You'd get 6 free DVDs, a free mystery gift, a gift for him, a gift for her, and free U.S. shipping. Sorry, Peter, if you go to adamandeve.com and use the promo code DROME. Now, tonight, it's still being the Halloween season, but not quite Halloween yet. We talk about horror movies a lot on this show. I mean, the three of us are huge horror movie fans. What about horror in other mediums, like comic books and video games and TV? What is your favorite horror TV show? It can be an episode or an ongoing series, something like that. But when you think of horror on TV, what do you think of?
Well, I really love the Tales from the Crypt TV show. That's one that I always revisit a lot. And even the very first episode is really impressive with William Sadler. And that's one that I always revisit a lot. Might sound dorky, but I was really into Supernatural for a while as well. But Tales from the Crypt, that's one that I always go back to. I love that show, and just the writing is so on point, and you've got all the great horror directors and writers coming in and doing their own episodes, and that's the one I would, like, to me, would be the definitive horror TV show that will always stand the test of time for me.
I wouldn't go Tales from the Crypt, but there's one episode. Remember the Morton Downey Jr. Haunted House episode?
Which season?
Two, I think, where Morton Downey Jr. is a sleazy TV reporter, you know, doing a Halloween report on a haunted house, but the house really is haunted, and half of it is kind of found footage, and half of it is the more violent the ghost gets, the ratings go up, so the sleazy producers are actually trying to egg the ghost on.
Yeah.
I thought that was a fantastic one.
Yeah, that was a really good one.
I'd have to go with Friday the 13th, the TV series.
Show.
Even though it was not, you know, Jason related, just the whole concept of was it Curious Goods?
Goods was the very generically named antique store.
And they just had to go and reclaim all of these haunted artifacts. And the writing in it was so great because each artifact had this really cool backstory to go along with it. And it was genuinely creepy. There were some shows that were a little more humor than they were horror, but the ones where they were horror, they were scary. They were genuinely creepy. And it was funny when it was, I remember it being on here around like 7 o'clock, and it always seemed early for that kind of show. I mean, it was funny though, because they had Monsters and Tales from the Dark Side were on around then. So I think back in the day, 7 was kind of the time for that, but God, now probably people are so sensitive. Something like that would be pushed on to like 10 o'clock or something.
Oh no, it was then too. Because see, Friday the 13th, the series was first run syndication, which meant whatever local station had it, usually a Fox affiliate, they could air it whenever they wanted, as long as they aired it within Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. They could air it at whatever time they wanted. That and Freddy's Nightmares were specifically solicited as a late night show for adults. But some stations found that they got better ratings if they aired it earlier in the evening, like with you. Mm-hmm. And they got tons of complaints. That's actually the reason that the show was canceled. Season 3, its final season, was the highest rated of the season, or of the show. In fact, it only came in just behind Star Trek The Next Generation for first-run syndication ratings. But Paramount was sick of the complaints because the show was so creepy and violent. So your station is one of the reasons that they were canceled.
Son of a bitch. And I'll throw in another one for more recent horror TV shows that I really dig. I like Netflix's Hemlock Grove a lot. I think that is a really cool, very unique, well, TV show. But I guess it would probably be more considered internet show since it's Netflix. But
well, people consider Orange is the New Black a TV program, too.
So, well, I mean, it's you watch it on the TV, so I guess it's a TV program. But yeah, so but that's yeah. That's one that I really dig.
I would have to go, when I think of horror on TV, I go to three different places because I have three different subgenres that I think all qualify. One would be the horror TV movie, like the original Night Stalker from 1972, the Kolchak pilot. That is one of the most well-done, well-written, well-directed, atmospheric TV movies for horror I have ever seen. But then, and I know Cecil will agree with me, and I hope Peter does, the episode Inside the Closet of Tales from the Dark Side is one of the creepiest things I have ever seen. Still, if I watch that episode on DVD, I have to check under the bed before I go to bed. Peter, you know what I'm talking about, right?
I haven't seen Tales from the Dark Side, so I can't really comment on that.
Cecil, you know that freaking creepy little Tom Savini creature, huh?
Oh, God. That thing, that's right up there with the voodoo fetish doll from Trilogy of Terror.
Or the monster on the wing in Twilight Zone, the movie. Good God, does that oh, thing God. Creep me out.
There's something yeah. on the wing of the plane.
No, I'm talking John Lithgow, not Shaq.
Oh, you're talking the Lithgow version. The movie. Yeah, the movie with, yeah, that thing. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, that thing was, well, they're both creepy, but yeah, the Lithgow mm-hmm. one is creepier. Yeah.
And then I would go with the 1985 Twilight Zone series. That actually had some horror episodes that were so genuine that even the president of CBS let them go commercial free for over 20 minutes because he agreed, like episodes such as William Friedkin's Nightcrawlers, putting a commercial in the middle of it where it traditionally would go would destroy the tension.
Mm.
You know, when the president of CBS says, "We'll forgo a commercial break because this thing is so damn scary," you're doing something right. Unfortunately, modern-day horror on TV seems to be gore. They don't seem to know atmosphere or tone anymore. Like, to me, The Walking Dead, it's not a horror series. Yeah, it's got zombies and stuff in it, but it's not a horror series. The only horror elements are the massive amounts of gore and the pointless jump scares. Never understood how zombies can shuffle along, yet be completely silent until they spring on you. Then all of a sudden they're... That's just bad writing, but that's beside me. But modern horror doesn't seem to have it. Like Vampire Diaries? No, you're not a horror series. Yeah, you're about vampires. You're not a horror series.
Vampire Diaries, I watched like the first season, and I kind of just lost track of it. I didn't dislike the show. It was definitely not a horror show. It was a teen drama that had vampires in it, and it had a little bit of occasional horror, but it wasn't particularly scary. And I didn't mind that because that's not what they were going for. I mean, it was based off of a young adult book series. So, of course, it's not going to be, you know, something hard and violent and whatnot. So I didn't particularly mind it all that much. I think Supernatural does a really good job with it. I think that they do a good job of making it something that is scary and has a cool story and is palatable for the early evening audience. I think it's on at like 9 or I've stopped watching it on regular TV a while ago, and I've just been catching up on the episodes on Netflix. But then I don't know, I like The Walking Dead a lot. I think that you know, the whole zombie,
the reason
thing,
I watch The Walking Dead is so I can pick apart the stupid decisions every character makes every week, because they always make the
piss and moan about it.
Yeah, they always, okay, if you've got four options, like, you know, it's like the Terminator drop-down menu. They always have four options, and the characters always choose the stupidest option out of all of the ones presented to them. I guess because the writers go, We need a zombie attack right now, so the character has to act like a fucking moron.
I don't know. I think that it's been a very entertaining series for me. I haven't disliked it at all. And I know a lot of people are pissing and moaning about certain things where, oh, it's not enough violence. Oh, or they're having an episode where they do a lot of character development. Boring show. Nothing happened. I'm like, holy crap. Are you kidding me? It bugs me that a lot of people that they do try to appeal to are the ones that are bitching and moaning about it. And thankfully, the show hasn't really gone downhill as far as I'm concerned. I think the show's quality is still up there and I'm really enjoying it. And I that's one where I can't complain about it at all. I've enjoyed almost every episode.
So you're what's wrong with it. Fair enough.
Yeah, but I don't go. No, I'm not what's wrong with it, because it's like I don't like when they have an episode where no one dies. I don't go on Twitter and be like, nobody died this episode. Stupid. This show's going downhill. That's always what kills me. They'll have one episode where they'll focus on the characters and like they'll just kind of show their daily life. And then immediately people go on Twitter and start pissing and moaning about how the show sucks now. And it's like there's one episode where they try to do some character development. People lighten the hell up.
Not a fan of a lot of them. I tried to follow Walking Dead, kind of gave up around after season two, maybe beginning of season three. I just, found it to kind of lack subtlety, and it was just felt more like generic action rather than like a good blend of horror and action like the good old Romero films and some of the Fulci ones. And of course, Return of the Living Dead is a great blend of it with comedy as well. It's just it didn't feel like enough to really follow. I don't really like American Horror Story. Definitely not a fan of any of the vampire things, like Vampire Diaries. I find to be shit. True Blood, I find to be shit. I do, however, like Supernatural. That's one that I've also been following for a long time. And I actually consider True Detective to be pretty horror-based, especially season one, as a very like psychological thriller slasher kind of thing, like very Silence of the Lambs, but grittier and sleazier. And same with season two. I would probably consider True Detective to be the most solid horror-based and horror-influenced show, even though I know it's meant to be more of a crime drama, but I think there are a lot of really good horror elements in it that make it feel like a sort of sleazy horror action film from like the mid 80s or something. That's one that I'm encouraging as many people as I can to watch, especially season two. Like, holy shit, lots of really great creepy atmospheric moments in that show. Great soundtrack and mood. So that and like Supernatural would be the ones that like I've actually been paying attention to, and everything else is just it just can't really quite keep my attention all that long.
Well, when it comes to the older horror TV, what do you prefer where you are now as, you know, an older adult? Are you able to watch old 60s Outer Limits episodes and still get creeped out by those goddamn Zanti misfits and the freaking noise that they make? Or or are you able to watch old Kolchak episodes and still go, this must have been terrifying to 70s audiences when they saw this? Old Tales from the Dark Sides or anything like that, Freddy's Nightmares. Do you think the older stuff holds up to a modern audience? And that said, they're rebooting a lot of these. Like, they're trying to make a new version of Tales from the Dark Side. I don't know if Tales from the Dark Side can work in today's market. That's an 80s thing, I think.
With those older shows, I think it really depends on the writing of the episode and how... Because I mean, it can be hit and miss, but I think there are a lot of older episodes of The Twilight Zone that still really hold up. The Zanti Misfits one, I fully agree with. Even the 90s Outer Limits, I felt still had a lot of creepy episodes. I still get creeped out when I watch Sand Kings. With old, you know, the old Twilight Zones, the old Outer Limits, then the 90s ones and all that, I still think can hold up. And I think they can hold up for a modern audience because certain episodes are still just that good, and I think it can creep out anybody from any generation. If you're into horror, you're into it. If you're not, then you're not. If you're into more of the more of the modern jump scare thing, you're probably not going to like it. But the people that are into like actual mood and atmosphere and really building up something to be creepy, those are the people that really get it and that really enjoy it. Because I mean, the people that do the whole Netflix thing just binge watch the shit out of everything. So I can see people really getting into the whole anthology thing. And I think there's still a place for that. And there's still a lot of people who love stuff like Tales from the Crypt and and all those shows where it's not quite episodic. It's like a different thing happens each time. And I think there are people that enjoy that, and it can be marketable. I think that's something that can definitely work, especially in the whole Netflix generation, because it gives people a lot to watch, because every episode is something new. And I think that's something that can really draw an audience in. That's what drew me into not just anthology horror shows, but anthology horror movies. Like you want to see all these stories told in the span of an hour or two, all these different ones, and experience all these different directors and different stories and outcomes. And I think that's really cool to get that in an episodic sense. So I can really see that hitting a mark with a lot of people, especially in the Netflix binge watching generation.
Well, just one thing, going back a smidge, I wanted to say that, oh my God, I agree. True Blood is shit.
I watched the pilot. I got a screener of the pilot maybe 2 months before it aired, and I was like, maybe. I'm like, it's not terrible. And then I watched the second episode when it aired, and I'm like, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, my wife and I, we usually have a 3-episode rule where when we watch a new show, the pilot, because, you know, a lot of times the pilot is shot way in advance of the actual
series. And there have been great shows that have terrible pilots.
Exactly. So we usually give that a go. So it's like, so if we watch a show and we're not feeling the pilot, we would always give it 2 more episodes. So we watched the pilot and we were like, and then we watched the first episode and we got about halfway through the first episode and we both looked at each other. We're like, nope, like, and shut it off. It was like, can't do it. And it's the only show that we've ever bailed that early on, where it's like, we didn't even give it 3 episodes before we were just like, no.
Oh, fuck.
And I've since, I had a friend of mine, his wife was really into it. And one night we were hanging out and it, of course, was coming on. So we sat around, we're watching it. And I'm like, I'm so glad I bailed on the show. I'm watching what's going on. I'm like, oh, he's banging this girl and he twists her head off. It sucks.
I saw some of the previews when I was watching Real Time with Bill Maher and stuff. And I'd see the previews for, like, you know, what's coming up next week. And I wasn't even watching the show. And I'm like, my God, this is more ridiculous than a daytime soap.
And what kills me is I read the books. The books are phenomenal. And they basically took the structure, they took the characters from the books and made a TV show that's completely different. Like, everything in them, for the most part, story-wise, is just so far removed from the books, it's ridiculous. So that just is insanity. So yeah, True Blood's one of those shows where it became this huge hit, and I'm like, piece of garbage? Really, people? Yeah, that show. I'm glad it's over. Well, they've tried to reboot, they did reboot The Twilight Zone at least once.
In 2002, and that was horrendous. The 1985 reboot was great, though.
Oh, it's been rebooted twice.
Yeah, the 1985 reboot went from 85 to 89, and that was fantastic. That actually had a lot of the producers. I mean, Rod Serling was dead at that point, but from the original Twilight Zone. So that actually is part of the reason that one was so respectfully good. Mm-hmm. And then the 2002 one, the less said about that, the better.
And then they rebooted The Outer Limits twice, I believe.
No, only once. That was in 95. Okay, technically twice, because Showtime canceled it after season 7, and then Sci-Fi picked it up 2 years later for 1 more season, but it was really a continuation of the Showtime years. So not really, because the Sci-Fi channel was still part of the Showtime package, really.
But didn't they have the episode, I think it was, I guess Sci-Fi had it, where Alyssa Milano was the sex alien?
Oh, no, that was way in the Showtime stuff, because she got naked in that.
Oh, okay. I thought
that was like a really early season 1 Showtime one. Yeah, she got naked in that one.
Okay, because, well, I saw it on Sci-Fi, but I saw like the censored version.
Okay, yeah, because, yeah, Sci-Fi reran them, and they cut out all the nudity. All
right. I don't know. I think it's weird. Anthology stuff, I mean, isn't that kind of I've never seen American Horror Story because I have zilch interest.
American Horror, okay.
Isn't each season its own self-contained story?
Yeah. My ex-wife watched the first 3 or 4 seasons of American Horror Story, and I despise it. It is, hey, we can do this, so let's. It's the definition of, there's no reason it needs to be this violent or this sexual, but we can get away with it, so let's do it, which is, I think, the totally wrong reason to have gore or sex in something just because. But It's so pretentious. If you read an interview with any of the writers or producers, they think they are absolutely redefining television with that piece of crap show. I hate American Horror Story.
No, it's fine. I can't say, like, I just know that what I've seen from it, it looks like pandering stuff. So I really didn't have any interest in it. So, but I've never actually watched it. So I can't say that it's garbage. I'm just saying that to me, it looked like it was bad. And considering some of the people that I know that I have vastly different tastes from, the fact that they were really into it was kind of a way for me to see, all right, if these people really like it, it probably stinks.
The only thing I'll say is I think season two was the witch season. Lily Rabb as a Stevie Nicks-inspired swamp witch. I have to admit, she was hot as hell as a Stevie Nicks swamp witch.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that. I'll just put that out there. And she was a rapist nun in the Asylum season, which I guess was season two, a couple of season three, I guess. I don't know. I really like Lily Rabb because she's just really, really hot. And I don't know, her as a rapist nun and as a Stevie Nicks swamp witch, I'm sorry, I'm into that.
Someone's got to be.
Well, you have weird taste.
I know. I thought the principal in Parker Lewis Can't Lose was freaking hot. I don't know if it's my castrating bitch fetish or what.
Going to the whole thing, I guess anthologies can work. I guess it kind of depends on who's doing them. And it seems more now that with something like American Horror Story that people want shock value. So if they kind of do something and they up the shock value and they do each episode where it ends on like some big shocking moment, then it'll probably do well. Now, doesn't necessarily mean that it'll be bad. I mean, if you look at it technically, Tales from the Crypt, every episode ended on a huge shock. And a fair amount of gore and a decent amount of nudity as well. So that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be bad. It just, there has to be a reason for it, and they have to have some level of subtlety to it. You know, it just don't do it, and you know, really, like, don't True Blood it.
So, which is what American Horror Story does. I don't think they know what the word subtlety means.
Like, I was talking with a buddy of mine the other night. We were talking about Tales from the Crypt episodes, and we were talking about the Joe Pesci episode. It ends with Joe Pesci being sawed in half. And because these two, he was dating two twin girls.
Yep.
And he was fooling them into thinking that he was two people. And when they found out that he was just one person, they both were fighting over him. And so they didn't want to give him up. So they sawed him in half, and one got one half and one got the other.
How about the Beau Bridges episode where he's still alive while being autopsied?
Oh, yeah. Where he gets he got the serum or whatever.
Yeah.
And they thought he was dead. And yeah. Or the one with the one with the cat with the nine lives.
That was actually part of the pilot. Yeah, with Joe Pantoliano.
Where he thought he had...
Wait a minute, the cat died once!
Yeah, and he was like, no! Oh, it was great. Yeah, Tales from the Crypt, when they were on, man, they were freaking on. They had some
outstanding episodes. It was just the last couple of seasons when they weren't.
Well,
the last couple of seasons were weak, man.
Sometimes you have a lot of shows where the producers want it to keep going, but they really can't. You know, it's just that the heart's just not there anymore, or the talent's just not there anymore. And they really keep plowing ahead, and people keep watching out of, I guess, loyalty, but hoping, like kind of like The Simpsons, you know, they keep hoping for like that one or two good episodes, and they're almost watching it out of like
ritual.
Just habit and ritual at this point.
Well, did you guys ever see the spinoff of Tales from the Crypt, Perversions of Science?
No.
It only lasted 10 episodes because it was not they launched it when Crypt was dying.
Oh, you know what? I was just thinking of not Perversions of Science. The hell was it? There was a show not terribly long ago. It was something of science, but it was like
No, this is like 97.
Oh God, no. This was maybe like 2010 or something, where it was a show, kind of a horror sci-fi show, Skinemax show. So it was like this company was creating clones of people as like toys.
Oh no. See, Perversions of Science actually had amazingly unique episodes, such as, okay, you guys all know about the War of the Worlds broadcast and how, you know, people thought it was real, right?
Right. Yeah.
This posited Jamie Kennedy and Jason Lee, you gotta remember this is 1997, neither of them are famous yet, and the episode's written by Andrew Kevin Walker, for God's sake. Jamie Kennedy and Jason Lee are at a Halloween party, and they're dressed as aliens, and they hear Orson Welles' War of the Worlds broadcast and think it's real, but they are actually Martians who are undercover scouting for a real Martian invasion, and they think the invasion's begun without them, so they go on a rampage across the country thinking that their Martian brethren are going to come to their aid. You tell me that's not freaking brilliant.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, and the show I'm thinking of is Forbidden Science.
Oh, okay. No, I haven't seen that one. I'll have to look that one up. But no, Perversions of Science, I recommend. If nothing else, the episode The Exile, where Jeffrey Combs is a Adolf Hitler-style criminal on an advanced alien planet where they have completely done away with crime. Ron Perlman is a crazy prison inmate, and David Warner is the chief judge. And I won't ruin the plot twist, but my Hitler analogy is not that far off.
Oh, God.
Are they on, like, Netflix? Or not Netflix? Are they
I highly
on, like,
doubt they're on Netflix.
Like DVD or anything?
I highly doubt they're on... I know they're not on DVD, and I highly doubt they're on Netflix. But, yeah, I'd say look up. It only lasted 10 episodes, 97, Perversions of Science. Out of the 10 episodes, there's maybe two duds.
Mm.
I mean, hell, William Shatner directed and stars in an episode where Kevin Pollak is a space pilot who his entire crew has died except for the android, who is a sexy robot who wants to have sex with him, but he's betrothed to William Shatner's daughter, who is the general of the army. The daughter, who is actually played by Melanie Shatner, can't have sex with him until they're married, so he has sex with the robot, and then she breaks and his dick gets stuck in her, and he has to try and hide that until he can get it off before Shatner finds him. That's an episode directed by William Shatner, no less.
That's wow. Amazing.
Yeah, I'm going to probably find... I'm sure Perversions of Science is going to be torrented like hell after this episode pops up.
Seriously.
Absolutely.
Peter's like, I want to see this now.
Yep.
All right, let's go to some other mediums. What about video games? What about horror video games? What do you consider a horror video game? Something with atmosphere or just shooting zombies. Like, is Dead Rising a horror video game, or is Fatal Frame a horror video game?
It needs to have atmosphere to technically be a horror game. I don't really consider, like, a game like Dead Rising where you just run around slaughtering zombies to be a horror game. To me, I consider, like, one of my favorite horror games is the Rockstar game Manhunt. Where you're basically surviving a snuff film. You're like an ex-convict that was on death row who's given a second chance.
Isn't that one that was actually rated MA?
Well, yeah, I think
it's really, it's really
whatever it is.
Well, no, you're thinking of the sequel. The sequel got the AO, and they weren't able to release it on consoles until they, like, censored it. And the funny thing was, it wasn't worse than the first one. It's just that happened at the wrong time when the whole Jack Thompson thing was going on, and okay. You know.
But that's a game that I really love. That one, it creates great mood. It's super creepy, and I love the story of, like, death row inmate given a second chance if you survive this, like, crazy snuff director's world where he's using all these, like, serial killers and gangs, and you have to, like, fight through them and stalk through them and, like, hide and play cat and mouse and all this shit. And it's just really fucking creepy and, like, satisfying at the same time when you're killing people because you're, like, surviving and shit. Silent Hill, I would consider to be a good example. Even, like, the old Splatterhouse games, I felt had some cool mood and atmosphere and great music. I mean, even if it was, like, a beat 'em up, all the creature designs were, like, very, very, like, Stuart Gordon-esque meets Lovecraft meets, like, David Cronenberg, and you're just in the creepy mansion, and the music is cool. And
if I'm remembering, I don't remember if it was Slaughterhouse 1 or 2. Don't you smack open corpses on the walls and aborted babies fall out at one point?
That was 2.
Yeah, that's 2.
That's a horror game, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And to me, I consider the Splatterhouse games to be some of the best when it comes to, like, survival horror. And it was one of the earliest when it comes to that. Like, I mean, I know obviously Friday the 13th for the NES came out like way before that. And it's technically a survival horror game. But Splatterhouse is just, it's such a satisfying game. And the music is almost like King Diamond-esque. Like, it's just such a, the whole thing is the coolest vibe, and it was just nothing cooler than running around as a buff dude in a hockey mask, like, just bludgeoning scary monsters in a creepy mansion. Like, that's just one of the most kick-ass concepts of all
time. Of course you would think that. You're a buff dude that has hockey masks.
Exactly. I what can I say? I relate to Rick.
What about like the Resident Evil games? Because to me, the Resident Evil games, at least the first three, were actually quite moody. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, you got the pixelated graphics and polygons and all that, but they actually did a decent job of creating mood, and then it turned into an action series after that. But yeah. I'd say Code Veronica was the last one that actually tried to get moody. Maybe the GameCube remake and Zero, maybe a little bit, but those were more action-oriented. What about something like the Resident Evil games, though?
I agree with that. At least the... I've always found the second one to be probably the most solid in terms of like creepy, moody atmosphere. It almost feels like a Romero flick.
I'd actually go with Code Veronica on that one.
Yeah, the early ones were definitely a little bit creepier. Code Veronica was solid. The series did kind of devolve into more of an action-based thing. And I think that maybe possibly because of the movies, they were maybe trying to make it more like that to make them more appealing to fans of the films. But I love the first three, second one especially. That's another game that I like going back and replaying, like that, Silent Hill, Manhunt, games like that, survival horror games where you have to think, you have to conserve your ammo, you have to, you know, hide sometimes and run sometimes and like trick your enemies rather than just running around and, you know, bludgeoning them to death. Like you actually have to think a little bit, and there's great mood and atmosphere and music. And even for like the time that it came out, even if it was a bit pixelated, like the game still looked great and really had like this cinematic quality about it without being too much like a movie and still enough like a really satisfying gaming horror experience.
I've been told, I have not played it yet due to my financial issues, that Alien Isolation is supposed to be one of the most white-knuckle games in a long time. People have said it's the most creepy, tense-filled game that's come out in decades.
You will crap your pants. It is, I mean, I'm kind of a horror game connoisseur. I mean, I love the Resident Evil games. I love Silent Hill series. There's actually a game I wanted to mention. It was a survival horror, little bit of action called The Suffering, that the creatures in it were made by Stan Winston. Alien Isolation it's from this new, like there's a kind of a new breed of horror games where you can't fight back. Like you have to find a way to get away or use the environment to kind of help you to fight off the creature. So, you know, and the thing is with Alien Isolation, they made the AI really smart on the alien.
I've actually heard that they overcompensated. People said on the normal level, the alien is actually too smart. Some people said to actually make the game fair, you have to play it on beginner because because you die so often on normal that they're like the alien's too smart for the normal gameplay.
Well, you'll hear the alien and you're like, crap. And you go and you'll hide in like a locker and you're looking through like the slats of the locker and you see the alien, and the alien just kind of catches a glimpse of you. It just runs over and rips you out of the locker and kills you. And you're like, son of a bitch. There's one where it was these awesome little moments, like you have to go get information on the ship's computer, and you're working on the computer and all of a sudden you hear a noise behind you. And before you have a chance to react, the camera pans down and you just see the alien mouth bust through like your chest. And you're like, son of a bitch.
The thing with Cecil playing games, he has good, bad games on his YouTube channel. And problem with him is he sucks. A first person shooter becomes a worst person shooter when Cecil's at the helm.
I'm good at certain kinds of games. I'm good at survival horror games. I'm good at RPGs.
No, you're not. I saw you play that one on the boat. You sucked.
Well, no, I was bad on that because the game kept pausing every, like, you know, it had a glitch where it kept pausing all the time. I was fine in that. I didn't die all that much.
Sure, Peter, huh?
But
Cold
Fear was a cool game. But you know, it was Resident Evil on a boat. But yeah, so, there's a lot of great, great horror video games that don't get the attention that the Resident Evil games get. The new Resident Evil games, I like them, but yeah, they're not. They've stopped being horror a while ago. Well, I mean, I should say they stop being straight up horror. They're horror action, you know, which I still think has its place.
What about then, like comic books? You guys, are you horror comic book connoisseurs? What would be a horror comic that you like, either modern or classic?
Well, obviously, gotta go with Tales from the Crypt again. I love all those old EC comics.
That's very classic, yeah, 50s.
Yeah. I've read a lot of like the tie-in stuff. I read some of the, there's like a Friday the 13th comic that came out for a while, and it was just kind of following, I guess, like the adventures of Jason and stuff like that. And those were pretty cool. I think those came out kind of the 2003, 2004 or something like that. I don't know if you guys remember that run. That was kind of a fun one to follow. And just like random stuff like that. Like Tales from the Crypt in particular is one that I really, really love. Just the artwork was so badass. And a lot of that style is what influences my own artwork when I do graphic design and stuff like that. So I love horror comics. I love the, I guess I would consider the Alien comics are definitely horror. I love me some horror video games and some horror shows and horror comics too, namely the Tales from the Crypt stuff, because I don't know, I feel like the artwork in those really, really can't be beat. They managed to kind of draw the way like Dario Argento films, like it's got this great like cool moody neon look to it on a, you know, on a comic book panel and the great like line work and everything. So it's not only something that I really love looking at and reading, but I feel like it's really influenced my own work over the years.
I agree with you on like, you know, the old EC stuff and all that. Maybe it's just me being the curmudgeon I am. I don't see the modern horror comics working as well. The modern horror comics, especially if they're from an independent studio, they seem to have the American Horror Story philosophy.
Yeah.
We can, so let's. They seem to be graphic for the sake of graphic, not for the sake of the story. And I don't like that. Now, obviously, that's not all modern horror comics. But when I was coming up, I was reading stuff like Faust from North Star. That was insanely graphic. I was reading the James O'Barr stuff, the Hart Fisher stuff, you know, Verotic and all that. And that stuff was all very graphic, yet it didn't seem as excessive as the stuff that's coming out nowadays. Maybe that's just my perception, but I think we've lost what a horror comic is. But then again, you had the really sanitized stuff, which I still like the DC Comics House of Secrets, House of Mystery stuff from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. I really got a kick out of those. They had a nice atmosphere. Arguably the best mainstream horror comic, Marvel's 70-issue run of Tomb of Dracula. The Marv Wolfman, Gene Colan stuff.
That's the one that introduced Blade, right?
Yes, Blade, Hannibal King, Rachel Helsing, and all that. I loved, because that was moody, arguably separated from the Marvel Universe. Yeah, the X-Men fought Dracula, and Wolverine killed Rachel Van Helsing, and you know, Spider-Man appeared in an issue or two, but arguably it took place in its own little pocket Marvel Universe. And it was moody. Gene Colan's art was fantastic in that. So I would say like something like Tomb of Dracula is where I go for mainstream horror stuff. If I had to go underground or indie stuff, it would be like Faust or the stuff North Star was putting out, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s.
I read a lot of the Danzig comics in like the 90s.
Verotic.
Yeah. Yeah, they were great. It was funny because you had to like give them like ID in order to freaking buy the comics.
That was because of Hart Fisher and Christian Moore's A Taste of Cherry in Verotic number 4. That issue was declared legally obscene.
Wow.
An Oklahoma City comic book store was arrested for selling obscene material to an adult by selling them Verotica number 4 due to A Taste of Cherry story.
Ugh.
So yeah, they had to show ID because of Verotica number 4.
Thanks, Hart.
Yeah, thanks, Hart.
But yeah, I read the Danzig comics. I read some of the Marvel Zombie stuff, and I know there's other horror comics. I never really got into them very much because a lot of times they just didn't really capture me all that much. A lot of times they just would go overboard on certain things. So I think I really missed the boat because I remember when Walking Dead was huge and they were constantly pushing that. And for whatever reason, I just was like, I don't give zombies. I don't give a crap. And then it ends up being this humongous
the comics
thing.
Are,
and
the comics for Walking Dead are just as bad as the TV show with we need an action scene so a character has to act stupid.
Well, I know it. I mean, I know it now because I've since acquired them and read a bunch of them. And, you know, they're similar but different from the TV series. And I disagree with you and you're stupid.
The Walking Dead comic, I actually, that's one that I read and enjoyed. I actually have a big thing of like, I think it's like all of the issues or something all in one big thing, or at least like the older ones.
I highly doubt it's all of them considering there's over.
Yeah, but it's like a big, like it's a big, like thick, giant thing. I do like it better than the show. And I think the artwork is really cool. I dig the whole like, you know, black and white, kind of like graphic novel look to it and the line work. It's reminiscent more of like, you know, old school comics where like the one thing that I don't like about a lot of modern horror comics is not so much that they're gratuitous. It's that I don't really like a lot of modern art style where they make characters look too uncanny valley and it looks more rotoscoped than like actually doing something creative.
It's too clean, yeah. Right?
Yeah, there's no like actual... They don't attempt to do any kind of cool lighting. They don't use color. You know, they don't have like one, you know, a light hitting a character's face. It might be like, you know, it's in like a nighttime and it's like blue is on one side and you got a bit of like white and you're creating like atmosphere or like reds and greens, which a lot of the modern horror comics aren't doing, which is why I can appreciate what Walking Dead does. I mean, it's got this nice black and white look and the line art is really cool. And it looks like it has its own art style rather than just, yeah, this really just generic, probably rotoscoped and actor kind of look. I find that to be really boring. And so I can appreciate the Walking Dead comics for doing what they do. I think they're actually really solid.
I would say what you guys need to check out, and you can get them easy in trade paperback, are the Swamp Thing, Alan Moore, Stephen Bissett, John Toblin volumes. You want to talk atmosphere? Those comics, those issues, it started with Saga of the Swamp Thing 21 through maybe 60. Those things are all atmosphere. They are so good. That's also where you'll find the first appearance of John Constantine. Well, all his early appearances, really, is in those early Swamp Things. Then, okay, how about we go to novels or you know, printed work, literature, horror literature. I think his modern stuff might not be as good. Go back and read Clive Barker's Books of Blood stuff from the early 80s. That stuff is so amazing. That stuff is so unique. Yes, it's not all horror. Stuff like In the Hills and the Cities and all that is definitely more fantasy-based. My God, you go read those books of blood. They are so original and so visceral. It's a very real thing with no supernatural elements, but the story Dread, not the terrible movie. I'm not talking Judge Dredd or anything, but they made a terrible movie out of the Clive Barker story Dread. Don't base it on that. Go and read the story. It is one of the most disturbing could really happen stories you'll ever encounter.
I love Clive Barker. His work is amazing. I'm also a big Lovecraft guy. A lot of his stories, you know, Rats in the Walls or Shadow over Innsmouth, Call of Cthulhu, all those ones, like still reading them today. Started when I was a kid and I'm reading them now. Even now, like I get chills.
When it comes to Lovecraft, I'm actually more into his science fiction stuff, like From Beyond. Such a unique, beautiful idea. I'm actually into more his fantasy science fiction stuff than I am his horror stuff. Is that weird that he's known as a horror author and yet I like his sci-fi stuff better?
Well, the thing is, he managed to blend them both really well, because when it comes to his creatures, they're aliens, or at least most of them are. Like Cthulhu is a crash-landed alien god thing. Like he created this fusion of these two genres of science fiction and of horror, and is probably why he didn't become recognized until way later, because that was such a new thing. And I think with him as a writer, it's not so much that he was just a horror guy or just a science fiction guy. I think you look at it as both. He coined his own genre, the whole cosmic terror, cosmic horror, science gone wrong with stories like From Beyond, which reading that short story again is one of the ones that, holy shit, that one really gives me chills as well.
Just the idea of From Beyond, that somebody thought of that in like 1918 or whatever year that was written. How far ahead of the curve was Lovecraft to have even thought? Now, guys, you can't base it on the movie From Beyond. Basically, the story, it's different, but it's the entire pre-credit sequence of the movie. The first 5 minutes are the story, essentially, but with pyramids and manservants, because it was the 1800s and you could do that then, or the early 1900s, you could do that then. You couldn't get away with the manservants today, but yeah, you know what I mean.
What I love about the Stuart Gordon movie is that it's pretty much, it opens with the short story and then it's its own kind of continuation of the story. And it's does a solid job of that. And really, I think it's one of the best like novel, or not novel, but like short story adapted films. Like I really love that one. Both the short story and the movie does it such justice, because it's easily one of Lovecraft's creepiest works and one of Stuart Gordon's just like best adaptations of a Lovecraft piece. Just I love that one to death.
And Barbara Crampton in the S&M gear is awesome. Yes. I know Cecil will agree with me there.
Oh, yeah.
He knows what I'm talking about.
Stephen King is another great example. I haven't read that many of his works, but like I love It. I love Misery, Christine, stuff like that. And just I think it seems to me that just horror is easily one of my favorite things ever, because I think I do like pretty much every version of it when it comes to, you know, there's books and short stories and comics and video games and movies. And I seem to like all of them equally. Like, I think that's it's just a medium that I love and always will love, even whether I'm reading it or, you know, watching it or looking at cool, gory, atmospheric pictures in a comic book. I love all aspects of it.
I don't know what it is about me. I like the Stephen King sci-fi stuff better. Running Man, Long Walk, Tommyknockers, stuff like that I like better than his horror stuff. I don't know what that says about me as a horror fan.
One thing I did forget about to mention during the comic book thing when you went into Clive Barker, I forgot Clive Barker had had his horror series a little more comic booky, but there was one.
Which ones are you talking about? The Hellraiser series or the Nightbreed series?
No, I'm talking like Ecto Kid.
Saint
Sinner.
Yeah, okay. I didn't like those.
Ecto Kid, aside from the terrible name, but now it seems a little dated. But it was a good series. It was a kid who he finds out that his father was a ghost, and he can jump back and forth between the ectosphere, you know, the ghost world, and like the regular world. And there are these like assassins that are trying to kill him because he has the link between the two worlds. And it's actually really cool, and it's pretty like disturbing at some points, because of course the ghost world is just all kinds of weird. Clive Barker, and because Clive Barker, yeah, being Clive Barker, the ectoplasm just looks like jizz. So like, whenever he uses like ectoplasm as kind of a weapon, and it just looks like he's slinging jizz at people. As far as going into horror authors, I mean, yeah, Stephen King and Clive Barker and Dean Koontz are all just classics, just great people who I love reading. But everybody already knows about them. Going into some different folks, there's Brian Keene, who is a amazing horror author. He's probably best known for a book called The Rising, which it was a zombie book, but it was a phenomenal zombie book. The book that turned me onto him was one called The Conqueror Worms. Phenomenal book. There's another guy, Walter Greatshell. He did a book series called Zombies and with an X. And it was just an awesome book. And there were, I believe, two sequels after that that were also good. But the first one was awesome. And I know they were talking about making that one into a movie. But I don't know. I just kind of have it as far as horror authors. I mean, I've already read almost all of King's stuff, and I've read a bunch of Clive Barker stuff, and I've read tons of Dean Koontz stuff. So I've started kind of venturing out into other people. And
you should check out David J. Scow. He wrote Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, and he's one of the splatterpunk authors of the 90s. If you guys had to pick, say, a TV episode, a comic book, or a novel that is your definitive horror experience that you want to let the audience in on, what would it be?
Manhunt, the PS2 game that I was raving about. I think that really is just one of the coolest when it comes to something that's not a horror movie. I find it to be one of the most solid video game experiences when it comes to horror. It genuinely makes you feel dirty and creeped out and weirded out and terrified. And I think it really just did one of the best jobs ever of taking horror and meshing it into a video game, using a bit of action to keep it going and utilizing stealth to create creepy atmosphere and using the shadows While I love the Tales from the Crypt show and comics, all the other stuff, you know, the Tomb of Dracula stuff was great. Clive Barker and H.P. Lovecraft and all that stuff. Like, I really got to go with that one, because that one really probably blew me away more than a lot of the ones that did. And I'm not somebody who plays games like I love playing video games here and there, but that one really had me glued to the screen and playing and just freaked out and really feeling like I was, you know, fighting for my life and surviving this horrific experience. So if there's one that I could, you know, recommend to anybody that's not a movie, that's from something else, it would be, you know, Rockstar's Manhunt, because that game just kicks all kinds of ass. And Cecil's right. The sequel, though, not as gritty as the first one was, is still a solid game, and it's awesome that it's come out in its full uncut form. Just Manhunt, you know, 1 and 2, just solid, awesome shit.
I gotta go with Silent Hill.
It doesn't have to be a video game. It could be a TV show and stuff too.
But I'm still going with Silent Hill. Right. I just love it so much, man. I mean, it's just the horror aspect of it, the story, the way that it explained things to you and still left you in the dark. It's just something that is one of those things that can be endlessly dissected, and you're still not going to be able to get to, the whole of it.
I got
to
go with the Night Gallery episode, A Question of Fear, starring Leslie Nielsen and Fritz Weaver, as one of the most creepy, and it's almost all atmosphere. The twist at the end is absolutely brilliant. There's a couple of jump scares, but it's one of those full episodes where it almost takes up the entire runtime. A Question of Fear from Night Gallery. That is so creepy. I can imagine people in the late, I think that would have been season 2, so maybe 1970, who saw that. Probably any kid that saw that did not sleep for a day or two. So that would be my pick. Night Gallery is A Question of Fear. Peter is pretty horrific on his own, but, you know, that's just his face. But where can we see him if we want to see him?
You can see my sexy face plastered all over YouTube, The Cinemasochist, on Twitter at Cinematica, and on the Facebooks, The Cinemasochist, and, of course, also on 1201 Beyond, scaring the shit out of you and making you a little wet between pants in the knees area and a bit hard at the same time, too, and making you questioning your sexuality and your fears all at the same time.
Damn, that's sexy.
I know.
Cecil, where can people not see you since you'd only do audio?
You cannot see me over on escapistmagazine.com, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, goodbadflix.com, all that stuff.
Okay, and you can see me and just hear me at 1201beyond.com. You can contact the show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. Go and check out some of the things we talked about. I'm sure I've just made a whole bunch of perversions of science fans out of a lot of people. Have a good night. Keep one foot in the gutter, one fist in the gold. We'll be right back.
Radio Drome is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.